chapter 5. And I think you'll immediately see why I'm reading this portion. 1 Peter chapter 5. I might say while you're turning there, I apologize for the portions of Moses' life I didn't get to. I think, well, particularly those of you who have taught lessons in the past, you know one of the biggest challenges is trying to know what to cover and what not to cover. It's always difficult, and I'm sure if we taught the same lesson again, we'd probably do it differently because there's some portions you'd include and some you wouldn't. It's always kind of a problem. So I know I did miss many areas of Moses' life that are important, and I don't mean by missing them that they're unimportant. It's just that we have to be selective. 1 Peter chapter 5, the verse 1, the elders who are among you, I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by constraint but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, not as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. As I say, I think you can see why I'm reading this, because we're going to see Moses now as a spiritual shepherd. He had been a real shepherd, that is, a physical shepherd out in the wilderness. Now he's really a spiritual shepherd leading the people through the wilderness. And you're going to see some of the difficulties that he encountered during the last 40 years of his life. Some of them very, very disappointing, both to him and perhaps to us as we look at his life. We're going to look at 7 of these incidents. Again, skipping over some, but I felt there were 7 that would give us the best example of some of the difficulties that he encountered. Would you turn next to Psalm 106? We're going to find that Psalm 106 kind of summarizes the difficulties that he encountered in the wilderness. So I'm going to be referring to this psalm for everyone, for 6 of the 7 incidents. Psalm 106 and verse 13. Notice this says, they soon, and I'm going to put the emphasis on the soon, they soon forgot his works. They did not wait for his counsel. And this was the first great disappointment to Moses. They soon forgot his works. We'll see just how soon. Let's go back to Exodus again. And verse 15 of chapter 15, verse 24. Chapter 15 would be immediately after the Exodus, wouldn't it? They were just taken through the Red Sea. They had a song to sing in chapter 14, or in chapter 15. 14, they were delivered. And already, before the chapter ends, right after they sing their song of deliverance, before the chapter ends, we have an incident taking place. And the people actually saw God deliver them from the host of Pharaoh's army. They saw this tremendous, miraculous deliverance, something that very few of us would have the privilege of seeing. God actually parting a body of water and swallowing up a whole army. And yet, they soon forgot. They no sooner get over on the other side and they're complaining because they don't have any water to drink. And notice in verse 24, I'm just reading excerpts here for the sake of time, because obviously I can't go over 7 incidents and read all the portions. But it says, the people murmured against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? Well, it's as if they couldn't trust the God who delivered them from an army to provide for them some water. Because they couldn't trust him for their personal everyday need after they were delivered from an army that could have crushed them. Well, the first thing that we will encounter in dealing, if God puts us in positions of leadership. And by the way, most of you here, I am sure that if you seek to be faithful to the Lord and go on for him, you're going to find yourself in some kind of a position of leadership before your life is over. And I mean ladies included. Now, that may sound like a biblical contradiction, but many times ladies in working with ladies have to take positions of leadership. For example, in preparing a meal at the chapel. Sometimes somebody has got to organize it, right? Take the leadership, see that things are done, that people are assigned tasks, that the tables are set. Sometimes in a missionary meeting, a sister's missionary meeting, somebody's got to get the thing organized, get it going, you know. And there are many, many ways. I'm not just thinking of the work of a pastor. There are many, many ways in which in an assembly we have to assume leadership. It happens in many phases. You're just going to have a work day at the chapel. We're not even talking about spiritual, counseling or so. You're just going to have a work day. Somebody's got to organize it. Somebody's got to organize that work day and see that people get tasks to do. And there is a constant calling for somebody to kind of take charge and see that things get done. It happens all the time. And undoubtedly, most of you are going to be in that some way or another in that capacity. Some to a greater degree, some to a lesser degree. But you'll find yourself in that situation. And when you do, you're going to experience some of the things that Moses experienced. And the first thing he experienced was the the fear of the people to trust God for their everyday care. That's basically what it boils down to, right? They could not trust God. They looked around in the wilderness, and they could not trust God to provide water for them. We see this occasion coming up in relation to food also. When we go into chapter 16, look at verse 2. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And they're actually saying in verse 3, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the pots of meat and we ate the bread to the full." Here, they couldn't trust God for their food. So, one, it was water. The other, it was food. In other words, we will find a manifestation of unbelief often among the people of God. You know, the very place we would expect not to find it and where we think it shouldn't exist is often where we will find it. You know, we say, why would God's people, why would they not trust God to provide for their everyday needs? Well, they often don't. There's often fear about this. Real deep underlying fears. How we react to this can be extremely important. Notice if you go over to chapter 17, look at verse 2. Chapter 17. And therefore, the people contended with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, "Why is it you brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" Again, for a second time, they could not trust the Lord. And on this particular occasion, they were actually ready to stone Moses. Notice in verse 4, he cried out to the Lord saying, "What shall I do with this people? They're almost ready to stone me." Well, at least we can take comfort in that. I don't think I've ever had anybody in my years of you know, being put in, trying to help the Lord's people. I don't think any of them threatened to stone me as yet. But the point being that how do we confront rank unbelief? And that's really what we have here, isn't it? It's absolute unbelief. They're saying, you know, well, God, maybe he delivered us from Egypt, but he only delivered us to let us starve and die of thirst in the wilderness. That's actually what they're saying to God. You just delivered us to make fools out of us, and you're going to let us die in the wilderness. How do we confront that? Well, I think that the attitude that Moses assumed in these cases were correct. Moses wasn't always correct in how he reacted, but I think it was here. You'll notice in each instance, let's notice in verse 24, verse 25 of chapter 15, the people murmured. What did Moses do? He cried out to the Lord. Notice in chapter 16, verse 2, the congregation murmured again. again, we see Moses. The Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather, and so forth. We see Moses in conversation with the Lord. And then, if you look over at 17 in verse 2, okay, the people contended with Moses. They murmured. They threatened him. And what does Moses do? Verse 4 of chapter 17, he cried out to the Lord. What do you do when unbelief is manifested in a congregation? You cry out to the Lord. What else can you do? You know, there is no alternative. Why? Because only the Lord can take away unbelief. Only the Lord can cure the heart that's engrossed in unbelief. All right. Now, the next confrontation that Moses has beside the water and the bread, all right, feeding and giving them to drink. He now met a second one. And let's go to Psalm 106 again. As I said, this 106th Psalm lists all six of the seven. It lists the things that Moses had to deal with. And in Psalm 106, verse 19, you're familiar with this incident. And it's just a little quicker to read it in the 106th Psalm than it is to, you know, to try to read all the chapter that deals with it. 106, verse 19. They made a calf in Horeb. That's Sinai. You know that Sinai and Horeb are the same. This is two different names for the same mountain. They made a calf in Horeb and worshiped the molded image. Thus they changed their glory into the image of an ox that eats grass. They forgot God their Savior, who had done great things in Egypt, wondrous works in the land of Ham, awesome things by the Red Sea. Therefore he said that he would destroy them, had not Moses, his chosen one, stood before him in the breach, to turn away his wrath, lest he destroy them. Now, this is referring to the incident, and I know you're familiar with it, in Exodus 32, where, while Moses was up in the mountain getting the tablets of the law, the people actually, through the leadership of his closest ally, Aaron, they actually molded a calf and started to worship that calf, saying that God had forgotten them while Moses was up there in the mountain. What is the picture we have here? I mean, what have the people of God done here? I think we have a New Testament interpretation of this incident, and let's turn to it. Sometimes we get New Testament interpretations of the actual incidents, and therefore we need to look at them. This is in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We actually have an interpretation of this. It says in verse 7, this is really referring to this incident in Exodus 32. Do not become idolaters as were some of them, as it is written. And here's a quote. This is Exodus 32:6. It is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Now, interestingly, in interpreting this, Paul says in verse 14, as he concludes this incident, he says, therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. Now, our immediate reaction is, as we contemplate this, how can the people of God commit idolatry today? You know, we say, okay, in those days, they literally committed idolatry. They made a calf and said, this is our God that delivered us from Egypt, and they bowed down to this God. But how can we commit adultery today? Not adultery, idolatry, excuse me. How could we do this? Well, I want to suggest that I think if we were to explore this in the New Testament, 1 John also speaks. John speaks of committing idolatry. And I think if we would examine the context of these settings, we would find that basically what idolatry is bringing God down to your level. Okay? It's giving it's a worldly, an earthly interpretation of what God is like. Bringing him down to our level. Now, therefore, we can say that they changed, how does Paul put it in Romans? They changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like man. It's bringing man's image, man's idea of what God should be like into the congregation. Do we have to deal with this in leadership? We sure do. I mean, it exists among us as never before. In all its force. You know, trying to do things the way the world would do it. Trying to bring things down, trying to bring God and God's Word down to an earthly level. It's interesting that Moses pleaded with the Lord on behalf of his people in this regard. He prayed for them. He pleaded for them. In this regard. And again, this should be the reaction of leadership today. Now, the third incident that Paul had to deal with, go back to the 106th Psalm again. We'll see what that is. We're going to leave the book of Exodus now, and we're going to slide into the book of Numbers, which gives us the account of what's happening to the children of Israel as they go through these 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. And in verses 14 and 15, it says, but they lusted exceedingly in the wilderness and tested God in the desert. And he gave them their request, but sent leanness into their soul. Now, this is an incident he's referring to in Numbers chapter 11. So let's go back to Numbers 11. It's an incident that begins in verse 4 of Numbers 11, where it says, now the mixed multitude who were among them, and right there, let's just stop for a minute. The mixed multitude who were among them. There is a suggestion here that there was among them those who were not truly Israel. Or in other words, those who were not truly believers. Now, when we take on leadership of any kind for the Lord, we must keep in mind something that's very, very important. And that is, not all who say they are believers are believers. Now, I don't mean that we should go around pointing fingers. You know, I don't mean that we should ever say to somebody, oh, you're not a believer, you know. No, I don't think so. Because we're not the judges. We can't judge the heart. But we must recognize in dealing with those who make up the body, those who make up, that is, the local representation of the body, that not all who say they're believers are believers. You know, that's why sometimes we get the reactions that we get. And we have to recognize that we are dealing with this. It can be a mixed multitude. And that's what we have here. And the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, "Who shall give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions." This is why Steve doesn't like onions, of course. You know that. "And the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up. There's nothing at all except this manna." You can almost hear them, the manner in which they're saying it. "Nothing left but this manna before our eyes." And then it goes on. Now, the story here is then that they highly displeased the Lord because they were unthankful for what they had. That's basically what it was. They were unthankful for what they had. They wanted that which they didn't have and were not thankful for what they did have. That sound familiar among the people of God? They wanted more of what the world had to offer and complained because they had to do without it. And were not satisfied with what God had given them. And this is often a problem that we do have to deal with in leadership. Oftentimes we will find those who are complaining, right? Who are saying, we're behind the times. We're not doing this. We're not doing that. Or, there is a general feeling of discontent. And it's really being unthankful for what God has given and what God has provided. It's always been interesting to me in my years, as I look back over the years, that generally those who have been saved and brought into the assembly that don't have an assembly background, they're saved out of Catholicism or in some other way, they come into the assembly, I always find them more thankful for what they have in the assembly. And I've always found that many who are unthankful are those that were raised in the assemblies. It tells us something of human nature, you know. We don't appreciate something until we recognize what it is we've been delivered out of and what it is that God has given us. And we do encounter this problem in leadership. All right, let's move on. I know I'm being brief on these, but we want to do seven of them, and if I don't keep moving, we won't get over them. Let's go to the 106th Psalm again, and we'll look at the fourth one. Sure. All right. His response was, I'm glad you mentioned that. It was a response of great discouragement. He was displeased, of course, with what happened, and he asked the Lord actually to remove him. You'll notice I know I'm skipping over some of these things, but if you read on there in Numbers 11, he actually was so discouraged he asked the Lord to remove him. And that it can be, you know, the unthankfulness of the Lord's people can lead us to that point, you know, where the people become so dissatisfied that we just figure, we're ready to throw up our arms. So, of course, it was not a correct response. That's kind of why I skipped over. it was not a proper response in for Moses to react. All right, then in 106th Psalm, the fourth one, in verse 24. "Then they despised the pleasant land. They did not believe his word," verse 25, "but murmured in their tents and did not heed the voice of the Lord. Therefore he lifted up his hand in an oath against them to overthrow them in the wilderness, to overthrow their descendants among the nations and to scatter them in the lands." Now, if you recognize the description here, we're moving into Numbers 14, where, remember, the 12 spies went in, spied out the land, came back. 10 of them came back with an evil report. 2 of them came back with a good report. And who did the people listen to? Obviously, the 10 that came back with a bad report. And they refused to go into the land. And of course, God was very upset with them. They despised the pleasant land that says they did not believe his word. So rather than enter the promised land, they actually wanted to select another leader and go back to Egypt. That was their decision. Let's get somebody to replace this Moses and we'll go back to Egypt. If you read the account, Numbers 14, you'll get that. All right. So what we find here is that there is a fear of the congregation to move ahead. Right? They were to go from the wilderness into the promised land. They said, no, we don't want to go. There's giants in there. See? And rather than go, they would actually have rather replaced the leadership. Well, you see the obvious lesson here. We're going to find many times the people of God, when God wants us to move on, they're reluctant to do so. They're fearful to do so. They don't want to move on. Because of the fear of the unknown. Because of the fear of what's out there before them. Moses' response here was, he fell on his face. Before all the assembly. Which is a remarkable response. In other words, he fell before God and sought his face because of their unbelief. Now, in the 106th Psalm again, we see the fifth incident in verse 16. 106 and 16. When they envied Moses in the camp and Aaron, the saint of the Lord. I don't know how God could ever have called him a saint, but he did. But then I'm called a saint too. Verse 17. The earth opened up and swallowed Dathan and covered the faction of Abiram. A fire was kindled in their company. The flame burned up the wicked. Do you recognize this incident? This is number 16. What happened in this incident was some of the representatives of the congregation of Israel got together, they gathered together in conspiracy against Moses and Aaron. They accused them of taking too much upon themselves. And it was an actual rebellion within the camp. Here we have, of course, the reaction that you'll always often get when God puts you in responsibility, places of leadership. We have the reaction of strife, contention. That's really brought about basically through jealousy. Through envy. In other words, these men wanted the position that Moses and Aaron had. And because of their jealousy, they were willing to incite a rebellion within the camp. I suppose experienced men of God have told me in discussions with them, and perhaps you've heard them talk about it, that probably there has been more division, breaking up of assemblies over this particular matter than any other one. And my experience would have to say, yes, that seems to be true. So what does that tell you and I? It tells us then that we want to, first of all, be very careful as the portion we read there in 1 Peter 5, not to lord over the people of God if we're put in a place of responsibility. Because that excites this type of thing. But then we also want to make sure that we ourselves set an example here, which 1 Peter 5 told us. And that is not to be ambitious for position within an assembly. You know, be willing to take the place that God assigned you. Be willing to be a helper, a sustainer, a builder-upper, someone who works toward building up rather than tearing down because you want a position of recognition. Avoid seeking recognition would basically be the warning that goes out here. Moses' reaction to this was, he was very angry. That was his first reaction. You'll see if you go through number 16. Yet he fell on his face with Aaron before the Lord. And I think it was a very natural reaction to get angry when God gives you a job to do and gives you a responsibility to do, and you get those who try to interfere because of their own desire to be there, to be jealous, and the first reaction is one of anger, but that anger needs to be subdued, and we need to fall on our face before the Lord, which is what we do notice in these incidents as we go through them. We've looked at five of them so far. And one of the things that stands out, repeated over and over again, is Moses before the Lord. You know, he did make his mistakes. He sometimes did make certain hasty actions that were unwise. But we do find this pattern in Moses' life. And you remember when we started, I took you to Deuteronomy 34. And I said, we want to look at the end of this man's life, and then we'll go back on. And you remember that said there wasn't a prophet like unto Moses who met the Lord face to face. That was the, in other words, the thing that stood out that made Moses a great prophet was the fact of his relationship with the Lord throughout his life. I mean, yes, he did. He made his mistakes. But he maintained a close relationship with the Lord throughout it. We're going to see even at the end when he makes his biggest blunder, it's the Lord that, so to speak, takes him by the hand and buries him. His relationship with the Lord was outstanding. And the point is that we want to make sure as the Lord would use us in positions of leadership, as that will be called upon. And I don't apologize for talking about leadership, because the people of God need leaders today. Leadership is one of the things we are lacking. In most assemblies, in most groups, there are not those who are willing, to be used of the Lord to lead the people out. And we want to, I think we'll take this from our study, that I trust that many of you in days to come will be exercised about this, that without leadership, the people of God will go nowhere. And I know we say, well, the Lord's our leader. The Lord's, yes, he is. He was the leader of the children of Israel, too. But he had human vessels that he used, didn't he? He used Moses, and he uses human vessels today. That hasn't changed. And we sometimes, I think there is a great danger. I know I'm a little off on a sidetrack here, but that's all right. I'm doing okay with time. I only have two more to cover. There's a tendency, for us, when we come down hard on churches because they have a pastor, there then is a tendency for us to sort of champion no leadership at all. And that's not good either. That's the other extreme. And as you get to know yourself, we get to know each other, we are people of extremes. We'll always tend to go one way, and then if we go too far that way, then we'll go over the other way. And we go too far the other way. We still need leadership. It is a collective leadership. It is not one man doing everything, because one man is not suitable to do everything. God trains and disciplines and prepares a collective leadership. And obviously it works best when there is a collective leadership. A one-man leadership leads to nervous breakdowns, weariness and weakness of the flesh, and it involves all kinds of problems. But a collective leadership, if it works in harmony, is God's pattern and plan. But leadership there must be. And I certainly think this should be one of the things we take away from a study of the life of Moses. I think it's very important. he was a leader. Though many times he stumbled, but not without recovery. All right, then the sixth one, we're going to go to the 78th Psalm, because this incident is not in the 106th Psalm. So if you turn to Psalm 78 and verse 37, it says, their heart was not steadfast with God, with the Lord, nor were they faithful in his covenant. I think this is referring especially, though it could refer to almost any of these incidents that we read. And by the way, the 78th Psalm does refer to a number of these incidents. It has reference to Numbers 14, for example, up in verse 32, and Numbers 11 over in verse 29, and back in verse 21. So a number of these incidents that we're talking about of the people going astray is in the 78th Psalm. But I think this one in particular would be an allusion to Numbers 21. Let's go over to that incident. This is the instance, you remember, where the Lord referred to in John chapter 3 of the serpent in the wilderness, where a serpent had to be prepared and put on a pole, and those who looked to it were not bitten. Now, what occurred here is in is depicted in verses 4 and 5. Notice what it says in Numbers 21, 4 and 5. Then they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, and the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way. And the people spoke against God and against Moses, "Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there's no food and no water, and our soul loathes this worthless bread." Interesting, their accusation, because seven chapters back, right, if we go back in this to Numbers 14, the reason why they're still in the wilderness is because they refused to leave it when God asked them to. Now they're accusing God here in chapter 21 of leaving them to die in the wilderness. And yet it was their choice to remain there. Well, certainly their heart was not steadfast, was it? They had become discouraged. They were not faithful. They were ready to quit. And there was manifested a spirit of discouragement, of impatience with God. It was what we call the attitude of quitting that really prevailed. Have you ever dealt with that attitude in leadership? Well, I might say that you'll find when God brings you into that you probably a month will not go by of every month in the year that somebody in your assembly is not threatening to quit. All right, that's just a very prevailing attitude. The response to this was of Moses was to follow. The people came to Moses, told him their sin, and Moses prayed for the people. Verse 7. Moses prayed for the people. You know, most of these things we'll notice, there's just a common occurrence here. The solution for the leader, maybe I shouldn't use the word solution, the only action for the leader is to pray. And yet, most of the time you will find that's one of the last things you do. You know, you look for all other different kinds of solutions, and one of the last things you do is just in desperation pray and cry out to the Lord. And yet, if we really believed in the power of prayer, we would realize that really that is the only solution. It's what we ought to be doing, and we ought to believe that can accomplish what we can't accomplish. You know, that only the Lord can remove discouragement and the desire to quit. Last of all, the seventh one, if you turn to Psalm 106 again, we find this one recorded in verses 32 and 33. Here was an incident in Numbers 20, perhaps the saddest incident in Moses' life. I kind of think what happened here was they had tried Moses once too often. It was just one string of discouragements after another, after another, after another. You know, it was just happening all during, remember, for 40 years he was putting up with this. It's one thing after another. And it says in verse 32 of Psalm 106, they angered him also at the waters of strife, the waters of Meribah, so that it went ill with Moses on account of them, because they rebelled against his spirit, so that he spoke rashly with his lips. Let's see what actually happened there. Go back to Numbers 20. And we'll just briefly read the actual event. Numbers 20, verse 1. Then the children of Israel, the whole congregation, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. Now there was no water for the congregation, nothing new. Water, of course, does in the scriptures speak of satisfaction, and they were never satisfied. So they gathered together against Moses and Aaron, and the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, if only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up the congregation of the Lord into this wilderness that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? Is it not a place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink? And then as we go on with this, verse 9, Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, you rebels. That's what it means when it says he sinned with his lips. Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock? And then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice. It was an act of anger, wasn't it? And he voiced that anger. I mean, he had just reached a point where he couldn't take it anymore. And the Lord, in verse 12, spoke to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore, you shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. And this was a fit of anger that cost Moses. As you know, he, at the end of those 40 years, was not able to enter the land. Joshua replaced him as the commander, as the leader, and he took the people on in. And Moses, though he was able to go up in a mountain and look over and see the land, he himself died on the other side and was not permitted to go into the land. It is kind of a sad ending, but it's a warning to us, isn't it? It shows us that we must not become so angered with the people of God that we dishonor the Lord in what we say to them, in our reaction, and in the way we react. In other words, God wants us to learn to endure these things, to put up with these things, to show patience, to be able to accept the adversity. Now, that's one of the things in leadership. You know, we have to realize there's always going to be contention, there's always going to be murmuring, there's always going to be division, there's always going to be those who are not satisfied. That's part of the cost of leadership. We must accept it, make up our minds that that's going to exist when we do anything for God in this way. Sad, but it's true. And we want to ask God, I mean, we're no different than Moses. In fact, we're probably more quickly tempered than he was. I doubt whether any of us would have lasted 40 years as he did. You know, most of us are struggling with 4 years. So the point is, we have to ask God to give us that needed patience, that needed endurance that makes for leadership. I close with this verse, because I want to just close on the highlight of failure. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 5. It's a beautiful verse. Here's what God had to say about Moses. Yes, he did run into this failure at the end. Although this was all in part of God's plan. Really, Joshua, it was intended of God that Joshua was really the trained military man to take them across the Jordan and into the land. So it's not as if Moses, shall we say, canceled out God's plans. God had this all planned. But God summarizes it in Hebrews 3:5 by saying, Moses indeed was faithful in all his house as a servant. What more can we desire? Just be faithful as a servant. May God give us all the grace.